We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
Two guests on the show today, John Keim, part three. John and I rambled on for a little while yesterday, so I cut it into three parts. The first two you heard yesterday, the third part you will hear today, it'll be focused primarily on the draft. Michael Phillips before Keim. Michael's covering the story of will they or won't they, the Wizards and Caps move to Virginia. He seems to think that it is still a possibility, even though most indicate it is near dead, as of now, as of the recording of this podcast. The show presented, as always, by Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. This from RedWolves81. Kevin, I love when you and Keim share some out-of-school stories about covering the team. The McNabb stuff was interesting, but I'm now interested in the book you guys say Colt McCoy could write. Do tell. John and I went down, we didn't even mean to necessarily, but somehow we got on to Donovan McNabb and Rex Grossman and the RG3 era with Colt McCoy in the room with RG3 and Kirk Cousins. Somebody else also sent me an email about the McNabb story that I told about Mike Shanahan. Mike Shanahan told me that the second game of 2010, which was a shootout with Houston, where McNabb threw for over 400 yards, Mike said if he actually knew the plays in the playbook, he would have thrown for 600 in that game. A lot of the players back then said McNabb was struggling to sort of be focused on getting the playbook. I don't know that McNabb really came here with a burning desire to play for the Skins that year. They asked him to wear a wristband. He wouldn't. You know, we've heard the stories, Santana, Cooley, and others over the years about sort of the struggle he had with just being really involved. Not that he wasn't capable of really getting it down pat, but just whether or not there was tremendous interest level on that. But the Colt McCoy stuff is, I mean, it would have to come from Colt. These are a lot of stories that a lot of us have heard about that time. Colt was in that locker room. Rex was initially, but then it was Colt with RG3 and Kirk Cousins, especially when Cousins took over for RG3 in 2015. And I think the one thing I did say yesterday, John understands this too, is I'm not so sure Colt was a big fan of either one of the two. But the two, RG3 and Kirk, definitely weren't fans of each other. There was a lot going on there. And a lot of the former players who we've, you know, had the ability to talk to about some of that stuff off the record, it's really for them to be on the record. And I would imagine at some point down the road, if there is some sort of documentary about RG3's, you know, meteoric rise and almost sudden fall from his perch in 2012, there will be a lot of stories that will be told for most of us, we've just heard second, third, and fourth hand. But Anyway, yeah, the talk about Colt McCoy kind of being in the middle of it and not really being fond of either guy, and watching those two and the relationship they had, yeah, he could probably write an interesting book that would probably just be interesting to some of us. Free agency starts on Wednesday, but the tampering period starts on Monday. And that means that we are going to start hearing news of deals that have been done on Monday, probably sometime around noon Eastern. And Washington, as we've discussed, has the most cap space in the league, somewhere between 91 and 96 million, depending on which site you believe. They've got a slew of their own unrestricted free agents, you know, players that will be available come next week to sign with other teams. Remember, they released a few players last week, Charles Leno Jr., Logan Thomas, and Nick Gates. But among their prominent unrestricted free agents, look for Kendall Fuller and Curtis Samuel to have a lot of interest. And Cameron Curl certainly could as well. And then players like Antonio Gibson and Jacoby Brissett and James Smith-Williams, Casey Tuhill, Cody Barton, they're all free agents. Joey Sly, their kicker, is a free agent. So Washington is going to lose a lot of these players, whether or not they will make a big run at bringing any of them back after they test the market. I don't know. I would imagine that they need a veteran center. This is something that I talked to John about. John did not seem to think that there was much of a chance that they would be interested in like a guy like Tyler Larson, and that may be true. Too much of an injury history there, even though he would be a veteran center and has played well and apparently is very smart. But a guy like Cornelius Lucas, who's an unrestricted free agent, you know, he may test the market, decide to stay here. They need tackles. They need versatility along that offensive line. I would not expect necessarily Kendall Fuller to be back. I think there's going to be a big market for Kendall Fuller, and he'll have some really good options. Cam Curl is hitting the market at the wrong time, and the team understands that with all of the safeties that are out there. Curtis Samuel played well. I think he'd be a decent fit for the Kingsbury offense. They've got Khalik Hudson is one of those guys that I wouldn't be surprised if they like. And is there really going to be a big market for Khalik Hudson? Probably not. They got to sign a kicker. There aren't many in free agency. Joey Sly is, you know, a professional kicker. I think John and I talked about him yesterday. But they've got a bunch of their own unrestricted free agents. They have a lot of needs. You know, there isn't an area really on their team that isn't, you know, at least in need of depth. Now, I would look at D-tackle and say it's not like they're going to go out and sign a big-time starting D-tackle with Payne and Allen. And they do have some depth there with Phil Mathis, John Ridgeway. You know, there's a chance at running back. They think they're okay with Robinson Jr. and Rodriguez. They may feel they're okay at wide receiver, although they could probably use a replacement for Curtis Samuel, but they may be able to find that in the draft. But it's not going to shock me if anybody get signed at any position or any position get signed next week because they've just got a ton of needs. And that's where I'll go now, which is looking at what I think would make sense for them or what at least would excite me. I don't think they're going to be super aggressive in free agency for the reasons that I've mentioned this week already. I think that they are going to build this roster over the next few years through the draft. I think there may be, potentially could be, you know, some cash constraints after paying $6 billion for the team. Would not surprise me if they move some backloaded contracts into this year. There are a lot of things that wouldn't surprise me. You know, I think I mentioned the other day on radio or on the podcast, had a friend of mine just suggest the Brock Osweiler situation from a couple of years ago, where the Browns essentially traded cap space to the Houston Texans for Brock Osweiler and draft picks, and then they just cut Osweiler. Washington's got all that cap space. Could they potentially trade some of it for some draft choices, which is the way they want to build anyway. Look, they're going to sign some players, whether they're players that played for them last year or players that are out there now. I'm going to give you just a couple of names that I think a lot of you have thought about. Patrick Queen is somebody that a lot of people have mentioned because he fills a need. He's a good player. He comes from a really good organization. I understand that they may be in a cash crunch, cap crunch, as it relates to trying to retain Patrick Queen. And I know that his play improved significantly when Roquan Smith arrived in Baltimore. I like Patrick Queen. I think he fits what they are looking for. Remember, they are looking for, from a player trait standpoint, they are looking for physical finishers, competitors. Quinn said that. Peter said that. They have an aligned vision on the player trait. That's why I think a guy like Kalik Hudson or Robinson Jr. totally fits what they will be looking to duplicate and triplicate, et cetera, in free agency and in the draft. Patrick Queen would fit that. Devin White would fit that. But let's face it, Devin White hasn't played as well as he did during that Super Bowl run for Tampa. With Ken Norton Jr. as the linebackers coach, Patrick Queen or Devin White or Josie Jewell out of Denver makes sense. From an edge pass rusher standpoint, you know, Josh Allen got tagged, Brian Burns got tagged, but Bryce Huff at just 24, 25 years old, coming off a really good season with the Jets, is out there. Now, the Jets were so good defensively. He benefited from being on a great defense. Dorrance Armstrong in Dallas played for Dan Quinn. Then there's a guy like Danielle Hunter, 29 years old, coming off his most productive season, 16 and a half sacks, 23 tackles for a loss. This is the guy that would excite me. He is going to be one of the top free agents on the market. This would be a splash signing. Danielle Hunter has missed games for injuries in Minnesota, but my God, is he a disruptive force. And they need an edge pass rusher. He is the prototypical now of the taller, leaner, lankier, long-armed pass rusher. You know, he gets his hands on a ton of balls. He gets a ton of sacks with his length. He's able to keep tackles off of him and make play after play. The injury history may be a concern with Hunter, but they need an edge rusher. There are some of them in the draft for sure, but there are a few of them in free agency. I'd love to see a guy like Danielle Hunter added. At wide receiver, if they were looking, Gabe Davis is available from Buffalo. You know, here's a guy that's got some size to him. Here's a guy that's got definite speed and would be a solid complement to Terry McLaurin. Although I'm hoping that a Cliff Kingsbury offense means that Jahan Dotson ends up being a super sharp and productive complement to Terry McLaurin. Even a De'Ami Brown could be a possibility there. Offensive lineman, you've got a guy like Jonah Williams in Cincinnati. He was a first-round pick, remember, out of Alabama. Played left tackle but moved to the right side. There's a lot of versatility with Jonah Williams, just 26 years old. You know, kind of in that guard center, Tyler Biotis from Dallas. Quinn is familiar with him. You could look at a guy like Jonah Jackson who can play inside. Who else that I'm not mentioning? I think I've mentioned them all. I mean, for me, if they went with at least one big splash signing, it wouldn't bother me if it were a big-time pass rusher. Hunter's older than Bryce Huff by like 4 or 5 years. Huff may be the perfect kind of edge, quick twitch, you know, super athletic pass rusher. You just wonder how much he benefited in his big season last year by being around some of the best talent on defense in the league. Patrick Queen would be outstanding. I just wonder why Baltimore would let him go, but the money may be a real reason for that. And then, you know, as far as the guys that they have, again, I'd be kind of surprised if they didn't try after Joey Sly tests the market or Kalik Hudson tests the market, if they don't try to keep guys like them, maybe a Cornelius Lucas and maybe, just maybe, a Tyler Larson. I would expect Jacoby Brissett to sign somewhere else. Much more, obviously, when we have real information on Monday. John talked about some of these players and others on yesterday's show, if you want to go back and listen to that. All right, Michael Phillips next, right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This segment of the show brought to you by Window Nation. March is a critical time to check your home's windows. If yours are cracked, leaking, won't open, or stay open, now is the time to call Window Nation. Buy two, get two free, no money down, no interest, and no payments for 24 months. Window Nation's professional installation teams have all the experience. They can install your windows in a day or less, and their windows come with a lifetime warranty. You can get a free, no obligation, in-home quote right now by mentioning my name when you call them at 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com. I wouldn't be endorsing Window Nation for all of these years if I didn't have complete trust in them. They've got the experience. They've got the credibility. They're trusted by over 200,000 homeowners, including me. Buy two, get two free. Pay nothing with no interest for 2 full years. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. Jumping on with us right now is our friend Michael Phillips. Michael is currently hosting radio on The Fan in Richmond. You can follow Michael on Twitter, as always, at Michael P in RVA. And I reached out to you because you guys have been talking down there, like we have to a certain degree up here, about the move, or, you know, the intended move of Ted Leonsis's teams, the Wizards and the Caps, to Alexandria. And that seems to have fallen apart here over the last 24 to 48 hours. You're in Richmond. This is where it's all coming out of. So give me your perspective on where we are now and where this is headed.
Yeah, rewind you to January when they announced the thing. They do the show at Potomac Yard. My understanding is on that day, they had the votes to get it done. So if the next day they had done the vote in the House of Representatives, the vote in the Senate, it's the House of Delegates in Virginia, but you get the deal. It would have passed in both places, and it would have gone to the governor's desk, and he would have signed it. You know, politics is wonky. You remember the Schoolhouse Rock videos. It's not that easy.
Yeah.
The president of the Senate, Louise Lucas is her name. You've probably seen her float around online over the last few days. She essentially kept it from being voted on. She did not allow the Senate to take a vote, and that was her way of killing it. Now, that was a controversial move, but it was an effective move. I never got voted on. We got to the end here. The session ended, on Friday, as it does. It's a very short legislative session here, and nothing got done because the Senate never voted on it. They didn't vote it down. They just didn't vote on it. So it's decision time for Glenn Youngkin, the governor. This is obviously a legacy project. He's got options to force the vote. But that involves, dragging essentially the whole Virginia budget into this. So the whole state budget, holding it hostage to this arena negotiation, which would probably be unpopular. He also faces the risk that if he takes it to an up or down vote, it may not pass anymore, right? There's negative momentum on it. Lucas may say, hey, you could cross the aisle and vote for this thing. Good luck getting a committee assignment next year, whatever her things are. So there's a lot of calculus. It's on Youngkin's desk now. The ball's in his court. But he was denied that up or down vote, and so the session has ended without it being voted on.
Okay, so the session has ended without it being reinserted into the budget because of Louise Lucas, and it hasn't been voted on. And what you suggested was Youngkin's got some options. I mean, I think I read that, he could introduce some sort of budget amendment or send it, down as a standalone bill. But there's, as you described, great risk of that. And he doesn't appear to have the stomach for it. I think he kind of said yesterday in his presser that that's not going to be the move. So is it over?
Not over until he declares it over. But if that's the direction he goes, this particular iteration of it would be over in the sense that I don't think Monumental can come up with the $2 billion to build this thing privately. I think that would be a reach. They needed the upfront. You've got a lot of options, none of which are good options at all in terms of, could you get foreign investment, right? Saudi or Qatari investment to come build the thing and pay you back, right? None of those are palatable options for very obvious reasons. Part of the challenge, is there's a whole state, and Northern Virginia is a small part of it, but with a lot of people. Louise Lucas, she was doing what was right for her Hampton Roads area, right? That'll play really well in Hampton Roads. Hey, the governor, a Northern Virginia guy, wanted to build this thing. I stopped him from doing it. So she faces very little political fallout or risk from this. This will play very well in her neighborhood. So that's the challenge for Glenn Youngkin, is how do you get the whole state on board with something that really only impacts one neighborhood, one part of the state. And for Ted Leonsis, if this is played out, if the governor, tosses in his hand, it really damages his bargaining position with Muriel Bowser in D.C., who now she's the only player left standing here.
Yeah, I mean, that next step, if we get to that, Phil Mendelson from the D.C. City Council said that their last offer will stand at $500 million, which, by the way, I actually think is the right move. They're getting a second chance that they weren't guaranteed, because really, a lot of what happened was the city's fault. I don't think you put it all on Ted. I want them to stay in the city. There are a lot of people like me who live in the city and want the teams to stay in the city and see Capital Arena updated and that area resuscitated a bit. But I think that the D.C. will be there, and I think it would happen if he said, we're done with Virginia. And it would happen at the last offer, I think. But you mentioned something that I had kind of forgotten about. Remember, he was dealing with Middle Eastern money. The Qatari fund bought, a minority stake in Monumental. Why wouldn't he just go to them and say, look, we're going to keep working on Virginia, but I need, we need a loan here to get this project started, or get them to invest in doing the project, by contributing a significant amount of it.
I don't think that option's off the table at all, because it gets him, right? We talk about stadiums and we talk about arenas, but what we're really talking about now, this, Kevin, is real estate development, right?
And
even if he chooses to stay in D.C., I'd be happy, you'd be happy, I think the fans would be happy. But Ted wouldn't be happy. He wouldn't get the acres to develop and turn into his own, and the mini village and the mini city that's all you ever hear about with these things now. He wouldn't get that opportunity in D.C. So given the land that's available here and the opportunity and, you know, the wealth of the neighborhood, I think is a factor here, right? When we talk about stadiums, so often, you know, it's public money, and what it tries to do is take a depressed neighborhood and get it up again, right? And MCI Center was just such a great example of that. You never went to that neighborhood, and it revitalized the whole place. Nationals Park, certainly a version of that as well, and Audi Field down on the Anacostia. Well, Alexandria's doing all right, Kevin. Yeah. They don't need that lift. You know, that would make the case for whether it's Middle Eastern money or Glenn Youngkin. He's a private equity guy, private equity money. There's certainly a lot of that floating around. I do think there are other options. They're just not as exciting as getting the taxpayers to do it for you.
Yeah. How does this ultimately make Ted look in your eyes?
Well, and he is the winner of the bad timing award here, because if this happens a couple of years ago, I do think the framing is, hey, at least it's not Dan Snyder. Snyder's on now, and so everybody kind of gets looked at in their own thing. And certainly, the Learners have really struggled in that spotlight as well, in terms of their spending on the team and their commitment to the Nationals, and maybe their unrealistic view of what their team was worth. And I think with Ted, it's interesting to me because he owns two teams, you know, two major teams. Obviously, you know, owns many more things as well. But the split is really dramatic. If you ask a Capitals fan, is Ted Leonsis a good owner? I think most of them would not say, yeah, we like Ted. Got us a Stanley Cup, takes care of the team, good game day experience. And if you ask a Wizards fan, what do you think of Ted Leonsis? He's a bum, which is the results on the field, but also kind of the way the teams have been managed over the years as well. So I do think in a broad sense, for people who hadn't been introduced to him, this is not a good first introduction for sure.
And then this woman, Eloise Lucas, I mean, I saw the tweet that she put out, you know, essentially saying she's the one that buried this deal with the, you know, the headstone in the cemetery with the dirt covering the grave meme. And I mean, it just cracks me up, the adults that turn into children on social media for political purposes. I mean, she apparently, right, got a lot of what she was looking for in a quid pro quo move or request, and she still stood her ground and said no, right? Wasn't there some sort of toll thing she was looking for, and maybe even some marijuana legalization?
Yep.
So, I mean, and yet she's standing firm.
Yeah, you nailed it. This is there are people I've texted with, Democrats, not Republicans, but Democrats in her party on the Capitol, who are really confused by this, because they thought she played the game really well to the end. The final offer, as we understand it, is, you know, the governor was going to kick in $300 million to take all the toll roads out of Hampton Roads, which was something she had asked for, and was poised to legalize the sale of marijuana in Virginia, which is not legal right now, another one of her priorities. It sure felt like she got what she wanted, and then in the end decided, nah, I'd rather spike the ball in Glenn Youngkin's face, and did that. There are people in the Democratic Party who say, you know, look, she may have scored what she perceives as a personal win for her brand and her legacy, but she hurt the party in a big-time way, and that, you know, these are things they have no chance of accomplishing without holding an arena hostage or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, look, for somebody who wanted them to stay in D.C., great job, Mrs. Lucas. great job. But as someone who fancies himself to be adult-like, I mean, about as low rent and low class a way of handling victory as I think I've ever seen, including her standing over the governor yesterday.
Oh, that's exactly where I was headed.
He
gives his press conference, and she's just hovering over his shoulder the entire time. My goodness.
Unbelievable. All right, so netting it out, your prediction is?
I don't think that this happens in its current form, but I'm also not. I think the declarations that it's dead or premature. I think Youngkin's working the numbers. Is it worth it for me to force it to a vote even with the negative publicity of the guys holding the whole state hostage over this vote. Wouldn't surprise me if he changes his mind in the end, because he's looking for a legacy project. He's a four-year governor. There's term limits in Virginia. This is kind of his last chance to get one of those. So I think we may see one more push towards it. But if this doesn't come through, I do think Ted's best offer at that point probably becomes going back to D.C., which would be a huge win for D.C. and a huge loss for Ted, who kind of villainized himself for no reason.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Is that if he ends up back in D.C. for the $500 million, it was quite a two-plus month. And they've been trying so hard to change the narrative. I don't think they really understood the reaction or predicted it very well. You know, the one thing, and I talked to Tommy about this, I mean, with, you know, one-term governors in Virginia, it has to be about legacy, because obviously it's not about re-election for Youngkin.
Yeah, because, you know, where do you go after your governor, right? If you're lucky.
Well, he's going to try to run for president, I'm sure, in 28.
Yeah, that you know, that's it. So you got 4 years to make your name, get something done. I would be surprised if this is truly him walking away from it. I think it's probably more of a step back and what's the word? Recalibration? Is that what Dan Quinn said? I think we're recalibrating, not rebuilding down in Virginia.
All right, let's talk about recalibrating. So we haven't talked in a while. Free agency first. What do you think they'll do? What would you like them to do?
Well, look, you can only sign who's on the market, right? I'd love for them to go get an impact left tackle to benefit their new quarterback. I'd love for them to get an impact tight end, but you know, you can only sign the guys who are available. So I think a lot of this money goes unused for that reason, is there's only going to be a limited number of people. As we talk right now, Chris Jones isn't off the board yet. You know, that's a guy who I'd be comfortable saying, go chase him. He's an impact player. Now you don't need to draft an edge in the draft. But there's very few of those guys out there. There's a lot more. He'll fill the hole for a season, and we're still looking for our long-term solution. I do think they'll get one of these name running backs, right? The name of the game is make life easier for your quarterback, who you're bringing in at number two. I think a good running back does that, so it won't surprise me if they end up with one of the names, whether it be Saquon, Henry, you know, Eckler, and
really?
Madison. Go down the list.
Interesting.
There's a lot of them.
Interesting.
I just think there's so few paths to improvement, and that's one of them.
That's interesting. I would not have, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. We don't know, because we don't know this group, but a Barkley or a Jacobs or a Henry, which are the three biggest names out there, or I guess you could throw an Eckler, with Robinson Jr., and I think Rodriguez is I think he's got potential. That would surprise
Agreed.
Me. A replacement for Curtis Samuel as sort of a, you know, hybrid, you know, slot, backfield, that they need. But that would be interesting. God, man, that would be big news. Can you imagine if they had Saquon Barkley along with that rookie quarterback? So let's go to the draft, because, again, we haven't talked in several weeks. What will they do at number two? Don't give me a name yet. What will they do at number two?
I think the vast majority of my possibilities are they're going to turn in the card and take a quarterback. I think it makes a ton of sense in their spot, where they're at as a franchise. I don't think the Bears are interested in trading out of one, and I don't think these guys want to trade too far back out of quarterback range. I think it's far more likely they turn in a card.
All right, so who do they pick?
That's a great question, Kevin. I'm putting my chips on Jaden Daniels as my guy, not the guy they'll take, but my guy. I just love his ability to work off schedule, to make the plays. His arm, we sleep on how good his arm is. It's freakishly good, to make the big plays that you have to make to win in the NFL right now. I don't like the people who go so hard on one of the two to disparage the other. Like, I don't think Drake May's a bum. I think he's a really good quarterback who you could plug in and get good production out of. There's stuff to clean up there. He throws lazy sometimes. I think that would get cleaned up about week two when he gets destroyed and, you know, face planted into the dirt by an NFL defensive lineman. I think that'd get it out of him real quick. I think it's all stuff you could coach out of him. I think it's too early for J.J. McCarthy. I think the media machine's going to be working hard on J.J. between here and there. but I don't consider him a serious contender at this point.
Another one for Jaden Daniels. You and I are on the same page. We'll see what they do. Thanks for doing this. Hope you're well.
Doing great. Hope all's well up there. Congrats to your Terps today, and I'll be bringing my show up to D.C. next week for the ACC tournament. Wish your Terps were playing in it, but that's a different topic for a different day.
Well, Michael Phillips really understanding the ACC mindset. First of all, yes, the Lady Terps upset the number one seed in the Big Ten tournament, Ohio State, today. I don't know if that gets them into the tournament. I know that they were kind of a bubble team, but now they'll take on, I don't even know who they play next. They play the 4 seed or the 5 seed, but that was a big upset today for Brenda Freeze and company. And yes, I wish with the ACC in, tournament in town next week, I wish Maryland were still in the ACC and we're getting ready to play ACC tournament games. But instead, we'll be in Indianapolis, I think. I don't even know where the Big Ten tournament is this year. I think it's in Indianapolis. So close to College Park. All right, I'll talk to you soon. But maybe next week with you in town for the ACC tournament.
That'd be great. I'll catch you soon.
Michael Phillips, everybody, one of the best. Really appreciate it. Up next, John Keim, that third part of my conversation with John, right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you have a moment to rate and review the show, especially on Spotify, Apple, it's much appreciated if you do that. Apple in particular gives you a chance to rate us up to 5 stars and write a quick review. This review comes from Skins with Z's at the end. He writes or she writes, best pod in the DMV. Love the show. I tune in every day. I wish there was some way we could suggest topics. For example, do you think the NFL would ever have the draft before free agency? Wouldn't be a bad idea. Anyways, continue the great work. Peace and blessings. Yeah, you can suggest topics the way you just did. An Apple review of love the show and got an idea for a topic. Of course, I get a lot of tweets. I get a lot of emails through the KevinSheehanShow.com website, at KevinSheehanDC on Twitter. And I do read through a lot of those, typically right before the radio show begins or right before the podcast is recorded. Because I find that, you know, when they're fresh in my mind and they have been interesting or provocative or informative, that I tend to use them more often and have a much better and more sort of spontaneous reaction to them. So I love when I get suggestions for topics. Now, this one, I looked this up after reading your review. Until 1976, the NFL held the draft right essentially when the season ended or in season. From 1968 through 1975, the draft was held essentially 2 weeks after the Super Bowl, 2 to 3 weeks after the Super Bowl in January and February. It was in 1976 that they went to early April, and then in 1977, so 23, 24, 47 years, we've had it at the end of April or the early part of May. There were many, many years ago drafts in season in November, in early December. But I think the reason that they ultimately settled on a spring date is because the draft started to gain popularity and there was a lot of work to do for the draft and teams wanted more time to prepare for the draft. And your season ends, you know, a lot of seasons end in December or January, early January. When the Super Bowl's over, though, what we've had, obviously, for many years now, we used to have things like the East-West Shrine Game and the North-South Game and the Blue-Gray Game. And now there's a Senior Bowl and there's an Indy Combine and there are Pro Days. And I think it just takes a lot more time to prepare for the draft than it does for free agency when you're really talking about evaluating players you've already evaluated in many cases before, and you've got a lot of pro tape on. So that's my guess. Who knows? I mean, look, the NFL has spread out everything they do so perfectly. It seems to never die down in terms of the interest in the NFL because there's always something. I mean, you went from the Super Bowl to the Combine to free agency. That'll lead into the draft, which will lead into a brief break before everybody's back. Well, I mean, mini camps and OTAs get attention now, you know, in May and June. And then by the time you get to the end of July, you're in training camp and preseason games are right around the corner. I forgot the schedule, too, the schedule release, which is in mid-May. Man, it has become a 12-month out-of-the-year show, that is for sure. All right, wanted to go back to yesterday and give you the final part of my conversation with John Keim, where we focused primarily on the draft, although we got into some other things as well. But I asked John what the most likely scenario was for Washington at the top of the draft.
Stay put and draft a quarterback at 2.
So you've been watching a lot of the quarterbacks, and you're a big college football fan like I am. What would your board look like?
Well, I think based on talent alone, I mean, Caleb, you're going to put up there because he does things that others can't do. But I think the guy that I still, and we talked about this, and I go back and forth, but I think the guy I'm probably most intrigued by is Jake, because – you know, and I say that in multiple ways. Like, the guy makes plays, and he certainly scares teams. There's also a lot of stuff that I don't know that I'm trying to find out. Like, what does this mean? Not that it's a problem, but what does it mean that, you know, they don't throw the ball over the middle of the field a lot? Is that on him? Is that Brian Kelly? What is that? You know, he throws from a lot of clean pockets, but what is that? Does that, not so much does it bother you, because some guys are like, they want to see guys throw from clean pockets because it gives them an idea of how they're reading through the progression, you know. But then other people say, like, they'll just look at cut-ups of the messy pockets because that's what you get in the NFL, you know. But I also like what I like are, you know, is the fact that the guy gets hit a ton. He gets back up. He competes. So you have to pull, like, if I knew that you can pull that out of him, then he's my guy. Because I see all this other potential. If you can pull that part out of him, but that's a competitor thing. Then, like I was talking to somebody earlier about, like, well, his time at Arizona State, and his numbers weren't good, but you know,
he played some really good games at Arizona State.
Exactly, but how did he compete? Like, to me, that's where you learn about, you know, you learn about various aspects of somebody's toughness, how they compete in that situation. So that's like my next step, is to watch more games from Arizona State to see more of that and just how a guy competes.
Well, watch the Oregon game his freshman year when he basically strapped the team to his back as a freshman and beat Oregon and knocked him out of the playoff race.
Exactly. Yeah. And I actually remember that game. And that's when, because I remember watching that game thinking, oh, this kid's going to be fun to watch for the next couple of years.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
I think I'm most intrigued by him just because I think – there's still stuff that I'm trying to learn more about him and what it means, because, like, sometimes, like, and we've talked, like, there are sometimes I'm like, should this bother me that, you know, that, like, with Drake May, a lot of times I do see more messy pockets where you've got to slide in the pocket, reset your shoulders, get your eyes in the right spot, and throw a tight window throw over the middle. And I've seen him do that. There's some of those throws that are really, really impressive. And I haven't seen that as much from Jaden, but is that a concern, or is it just it didn't develop that way? What?
Yeah, you know? I mean,
I don't want to ping a guy for that.
I mentioned this a couple times in the last week because I like Jaden Daniels a lot. You and I have talked about this. I like him a lot. Yeah. I don't mind Drake May either. I really kind of – Michael Penix is really – I'm going back and realizing how much I thought he was really good in watching games. But Jaden Daniels and LSU's offense face the fewest third downs of any team in the country, and it's not even close. Yeah. And so when do you typically see quarterbacks drop back, potentially get a messier pocket with more blitz pressure than is on third and five, third and seven? And that's usually when you see more intermediate throws.
Here we saw it on every down, but that's different.
What'd you say?
In this city, we saw it on most downs.
Yeah, that was but I'm just saying that one of the reasons the number of intermediate throws made wasn't super high is they didn't have a lot of intermediate throw down in distances. They just kept getting right. chunk play after chunk play on first and second down.
Well,
you know, and so.
But that's so like that's what I say. I think that. Like, I get all that, and it's not even saying that he can't do it. It's that,
yeah, you didn't
why
see
not?
It enough.
And what, where is, exactly. And so then you're trying to measure it, and then you look at, okay, look at the receivers he's throwing to. But as an Ohio State fan, I did not hold that against C.J. Stroud.
Right.
You know, I knew guys like, you know, you could tell guys who are made by the receivers versus helping the receivers. And I thought C.J. was like that. And I think Justin Fields was really good with him, too. I just think that C.J. was more NFL ready. And I believe that last year, too. So it's not saying – but when you watch, like, when I was watching LSU, they're playing Florida, and he's throwing an 8-yard pass to Malik Nabers, and he's turning to 25 yards. Then I'm watching North Carolina, and he's throwing an 8-yard pass that turns into an 8-yard gain. I mean, because they – and I know they have one good receiver, but, like, he's – you know, they didn't have Malik Nabers. They didn't have Brian Thomas Jr. So – but again, then you also have to say, okay, then how does he make them better? And I think that he throws a beautiful fade ball, And I think there's a trust factor that he's developed with throwing down the field. Now, some of that's with who you're throwing to. And then other people have told me too, like he's facing more complex defenses in the SEC.
No doubt. A&M, Missouri, Bama, for sure.
Yes, yeah, and so you have to take that into account. So, you know, I there are things I'm concerned about with each one of these guys. But I
so do you have Daniels ahead of May?
I think today I would. And then
today
tomorrow it might be different.
I hear you.
Because I've talked to – you know why? Because I've talked to a lot of people about Jaden today. And I'm just like, okay, that makes – so. But I also like – there are things that I, for me with him, there are things I'd want to be satisfied with. It's just like, you know, the size thing, it's the body frame concerns me.
Right.
Because you can't play the way he did and survive in the NFL.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you can help with that, and if you give him like, you know, can you set up X number of safe throws throughout the game? And I think you can do that, right? You know, the crossers or whatever, some screens, whatever it is. You can do some of that to help with the issue. And then here's another thing, Kevin. Develop a run game and maybe take some pressure off the rookie quarterback.
Well, boy, that's no. Why would you want to do that? Let's just throw it 800 times.
Because it's going to speed up his development.
Well, you know, it's so funny because there was a moment at one point during the season. It was the Philly game when they really started to go to some of the quick game, but they weren't lowering the attempts.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm okay with this. Like, I'm okay if they're, you know, screens, quick game, bubble. As long as you're not dropping them back 5-7 step drops over and over again like they did against Buffalo, like they did against, you know, Arizona.
Agreed.
And to me, the pass attempt number in that scheme didn't bother me, but he waffled between that scheme and a lot of pure drop back.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. And, you know, the hard part, like I said, for Sam, one of the differences to me with between he and Jacoby, why Jacoby, I think, had some success, is just that 6'4" height.
No doubt.
Because the line where Sam had some heart, where the hard thing for him was, if the line's getting pushed back, it's harder for a guy who's 6'1" to see over you. And there were times where I'm watching Jacoby, he's not moving out of there because he can see, like, this is opening up, just hold your ground, get rid of it now. And I, you know, like where Sam's got to get out of there because, and it's, and that's the 6-1 versus 6-4. But, and this is what other people there would tell me too, you know, like they had to mimic the New Orleans model with Drew Brees, which is build a really strong interior and create gaps in that pass rush. And that didn't happen enough. And that's not on Howell. And I think where Sam, where you talk to people there, like where he could have improved too is with like anticipation and all that. But it was, that's why I say it was a mismatch. It was a poor match between quarterback and line. Veteran quarterback with that line, much better. Stronger line with this kid, much better, right? And so it was poorly put together and executed.
Maybe we can save this for the next conversation, but it's hard for me not to just bring it up now. You know, because you just said it was not the right setup. So why did Ron hire Eric Bieniemy?
We're going back to Andy Reid.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Say it.
He did
Andy Reid a favor.
Well, I think he did him a favor, but I think there was a definite, there's a couple things, and I don't think it was just that. I do think that for Ron, like, that there was some things need to change.
Right.
And I don't know if he fully grasped just the impact of some of how it was going to go. But I do think some of it was the desire, like, to shake it up a little bit. And I don't blame him for that. I don't. And, you know, so I think that was part of it. And then I think the hard part, and I think he would agree with this, that he abdicated a little bit too much.
No doubt.
And players talked about that, and I think he would probably agree with that. But I don't think it was. I think you're using the recommendation of Andy Reid as well, because I don't think he's going to hire him just as a favor, because that was a must win season for them. And so if you're going to, you know, but that's why I say I think there was a definite part of it was the desire to shake things up. And maybe he
has a conscience and he thinks in those terms, but
yeah. Oh,
you
yeah,
know, you,
yeah.
you could have done that in a lot of different, in a lot of other hires,
yes,
like hiring
have.
Dave Canales as an example.
yeah.
You know, but yeah, no, I mean, we're covering old ground. It's just that, you know, a year ago, you know, I'm sitting here and, you know, a lot of people were really thrilled and thought that they had pulled off the coup of the century hiring Eric Bieniemy. And I'm like, well,
right.
He wouldn't have, he'd be in Kansas City if Washington didn't hire him. There were no other opportunities for him.
I'm not sure he would have been there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because his contract's up. And,
yeah.
You know, so I don't know that he would have been there. But I think the other thing, even last year, like, when they bring somebody on, I kind of like to see, okay, what are they seeing? What could be the net benefit here? But the thing that, you know, and so you saw, like, okay, you'd hear attention to detail, you know, this thing and that thing. But what we didn't know, and because despite what Bieniemy would say, he was not the primary play caller there. So this was a new situation for him where everything was on him. And he all, you know, he, I wouldn't say bristle because he didn't bristle at questions. He might correct you or he might say, you know, like, I always liked dealing with the guy. He was always very good with us. But, you know, if you said, like, well, this is your first time, well, I was OC for 6 years. Like, yes, but we also know Andy Reid was there. This is your show. So that's what we didn't know is how he would handle the full-time role with that. But also, then you throw in, like, it's going to take a little bit of time because you've got a quarterback with one start who's now your guy. You're adding in new starters at four line spots. It doesn't happen overnight. And then you throw in the fact that the defense was historically bad here, unexpectedly
right.
bad, and then it just makes it everything harder. But then I think it's like, okay, like, what do you learn about him along the way? You know, it takes time. It does, but it didn't work, and for a few reasons. But yes, it was. That was always the caveat, and I would say this, like, even with this staff, with the caveat with this offensive staff, we don't know. Like, I think there's a lot that I like individually about this. We don't know how collectively it's going to look or how it's going to go, and we don't know you know, what's, you know, with Kingsbury, you hear some people worry, like, I mean, the knock in Arizona was, does this offense get the quarterbacks, does it cause the quarterbacks to wear down? I don't, you know, that's, whether it does or not, like, that's one of the things that people would say around the league. And so how is it going to look here? Now, I think, like, I like, there are some of these coaches I really like that with the addition of them. So I think it potentially is a good staff, but you still have to see. It's the first time working together.
Of course. It's the first time the front office is working together during this offseason.
Right.
So, right. All right, look,
I think this group will end up getting it. I just, you don't know when.
Yeah. All right. Two more to finish up. And actually, the first one is a real quick one because I haven't had you on since Quinn was hired. I don't think I have. Maybe on radio, but not on the podcast. Just for everybody listening, and look, John and I have had several conversations about this, but for those that still think that they got, you know, their distant choice in Dan Quinn, they had to settle for Dan Quinn, that they were just devastated at not being able to interview and get Ben Johnson, or Mike McDonald turned him down flat. Can you just, you know, for the record, as an actual person covering the team, to tell everybody how this went down and how thrilled they are to have Dan Quinn?
I mean, so in the beginning, there was no doubt that people of interest, Ben Johnson was high on there, so was Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn was always at or near the top of their list because he checked every box that they wanted. And, you know, the perception outside of here became, oh, it's all Ben Johnson. And then it was, oh, it's all McDonald. But Dan Quinn was always, always, always a guy they liked. And they heard, you know, and I knew this personally because I experienced the same thing, that if I talked to anybody who coached with him, played for him, worked for him, they all said the same thing about the guy. Like, it wasn't just always a great guy, you know. I had one coach tell me he set the standard better in the building than any coach I've been around. This guy's been around some good coaches. You know, I talked to Matt LaFleur, who he passed him over as an OC in Atlanta after Kyle left, because I didn't know what Matt would think. I haven't talked to Matt about him. I knew at the time that he was disappointed by that. So I called him. He's like, he loves the guy. So, like, and, you know, why is that? So, but this is what they were experiencing, too. Like, I was told, and I wrote a big piece on Inside the Hire of him a couple weeks ago, but I was told that they significantly more people reached out to them about Dan Quinn than anybody else on their list. So it was like, to think he was some settled, that they settled for him is ludicrous. They, like, one thing I know about this group, and I'm applying it to the quarterback search as well, they are a go through the process group, keep an open mind group. So they would purposely, after these interviews, they wouldn't sit there and say, oh my God, that was a great interview. Oh my God. They would try to detach the emotion as much as they could because they didn't want to be tainted by it. And it's hard to do that. But the point is, like, there was never, like, it wasn't like, oh my God, we've got to have Ben Johnson. Oh my God, Mike McDonald left. Never the case. This is the, because, like, in the beginning, when with the GM search with Adam Peters, now that went fast, but it also started long before the end of the season. But he was the guy they targeted after doing their research. He was the guy they targeted with the coach search, and he was far and away the top choice. In the coach search from the beginning, I had people tell me, like, there isn't that one guy that they just have to have, like the way with Adam Peters. They liked the depth of their class. And, like, Raheem Morris was a legitimate candidate.
Yep.
So when Ben Johnson stays put and when Mike McDonald goes to Seattle, it was like, okay, check, check. You know, who's left? This is, you know, but it wasn't a, oh my God, what are we going to do now? Like, they hadn't even talked to Ben Johnson in person. How could he be tops on their list?
Right.
And it was a 2-hour Zoom interview that they had with him. You know what I mean? Like, they're not, like, I think I'm rambling on with it, but it also, I just, like, Dan Quinn all along, Kevin, and again, we talked about this, like, you would hear, like, you know, Ben Johnson is not a lock, right? And, like, and they like Dan Quinn. But I also knew from my own experience, this is what they're looking for. This is what Dan Quinn offers. Oh, 1 + 1 probably equals 2 here. Like, even with McDonald, I think McDonald went to the best place for him, and they got the best guy for them here. because I think with McDonald, you know, and I had someone tell me this too, like, it's probably the best thing for him is going to having a GM who is an experienced GM. Whereas, like, if you put an inexperienced GM with an experienced head coach who's on the defensive side of the ball, how is it a little bit harder to build that way? And so, like, that's why it was also, so I think that's another reason why for Quinn, it just made sense for him here. But I know how pumped up Adam Peters was after they got him. I mean, it's just, so yeah, I'm rambling because I just know that the narratives that were out there did not match what was going on behind the scenes.
Right. All right, last one real quickly. Do you have any hunch on who Adam Peters, who the front office, who Dan Quinn likes at number two? I have no clue.
No. And so, you know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody the other day who has a good relationship with Peters and has known him for a long time. And I asked him that question. He's like, I have no idea. He's like, when it comes to that stuff, he is really tight-lipped. So that's what I'll say. I don't know. I know, like, you try to read the tea leaves of what they say. And, again, listen to what they want and then match it up with the quarterback. Right.
But the problem with that is what they want seems to apply to all three quarterbacks.
Well, that is a problem. But, you know, there are things that you're like, is this, you know, but yeah. And, yes, that is a problem. So I don't know I don't know who they're, and I also don't think that they settled on a guy now.
Right.
Again, like, they're going to want to, like, I think step one, you watch the film. Step two, you're meeting him in person at the combine. Step three, pro days and visits. And I think those visits are going to solidify. And you can sit there and say, you know what, I really like, you know, quarterback X, whether it's Daniels or May. And, like, the Bills, for example, when they settled on Josh Allen, I know they really liked him because he needed a quarterback. He knew he probably wasn't going to go a certain spot. When they settled on him, though, is like little things. They visited him out in Wyoming, and they took him out to lunch. And, like, one of the things that sealed it was how he treated other people in that restaurant, the wait staff and all that. Like, and not that, like, you know, that's – but that was, like, the final thing, like, okay, this kid's legit. He can be a leader of a franchise because of, you know, they like the way he treats other people, et cetera. And not, I mean, if you don't have the arm, you don't have the athleticism, the other stuff isn't going to matter. But if it's close, you're going to look at all sorts of things. And just even the way, like, you need to see him at the pro day. How do their teammates react to them in that setting? That will tell you a lot about them, too. You know, I know for the Browns with Baker Mayfield, part of the thing was the way people responded to him at his pro day. And, you know, so, like, there's a lot of little things that's still to be learned, which is why I don't think they have settled on a guy at this point.
Great job. Appreciate it. Took too much of your time. Part of that's your fault. But I always love having these conversations with you on the air and off of it. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Kevin.
John Keim, everybody. Thanks to John. Thanks to Michael Phillips for jumping on with us. I'm going to do another show over the weekend. I'll have Nick Ackridge from Pro Football Focus on with me, and we'll preview free agency, we'll talk draft and get Nick's breakdown on the quarterbacks. He's a senior data analyst with PFF and a huge Washington fan. We've had Nick on the show many times, but I'm going to get another show out there because I think Monday's show, we will wait until later in the afternoon because I think once the tampering period opens, there could be a lot of news on Monday. It's possible that a lot of the news will be confined to other teams. But we'll get a show out definitely on Monday. It just might be on the later side. So between now and then, I will put a shorter show out over the weekend with Nick Ackridge. All right, that's it. Have a good Friday night.